Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's Miles? Miles. How are you doing, Miles?
What's Miles? My Miles?
Miles?
My I'm
gray?
Good.
What's Miles? My gray, maybe?
I just had a bunch of ice cream.
Yeah. Yeah, you're eating blue ice cream, which is going to make it look like you were, I don't know, I want to say like something grossly sexual about like the Braveheart guy because all the blue stuff.
Oh, yeah. William Wallace.
I didn't figure out a good joke ahead of time. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know what you'd say, but I get it. I get where you're going with it.
You get, you understand what the potential was.
Oh, yeah, totally. I see the elements on the table for something great. I just didn't know how to put it together either.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, this ice cream is so blue that it's. I'm a little alarmed how much I like it, and I feel like a fucking child when I order it at this place, but you know what? Who gives a fuck? Maybe I am a child.
What was your first thing that you ate as a kid, then you ate it again as an adult, and you're like, this isn't food? What the fuck? People shouldn't have access to this.
Oh my God. There's a few things, but I feel like maybe like shark bites or like gushers.
Oh, gushers are wholesome.
I love gushers. Well,
I love them too. And I remember back at the old studio, we had them there. Remember, Sophie?
Yeah, I ordered them. I ordered them. Yeah, I remember.
And I remember, but here's the thing. Not that I'm saying I disrespect them, but I remember eating them like, yo, this is just sugar. Yeah. What the fuck am I doing? Yeah. But it's delicious.
Pure sugar. Mine was always, and I still kind of love them, is those like, what do you call it? The it's like the stick and then like the pouches of colored sugar.
Oh, Fun Dip?
Yeah, Fun Dip. You're just like shoveling sugar into your mouth. Dude, it's so funny. Like, what an awesome thing.
Yeah, just chemicals on a dipstick that you just licked over. Like, what was that stick even made of?
It's pure sugar, Miles. Yeah. The only thing a Fun Dip is just raw sugar. It's just pure sugar.
I guess the only thing is that, just like the pouch that it was in was just the only thing that was not sugar.
No. And it's like, you know, we're recording this the week that, I don't know when this will air, but as we're recording this, everyone, like, there's just a big story where they're like, aspartame can cause you cancer. And like, you look into it and it's like, well, if you have like between a dozen and three dozen cans a day, you might get cancer. As opposed to like, I don't know, man, if everything, like, we're all shoveling so much crap and poison into ourselves at all times. I don't know. I feel like Diet Coke's not going to be many people's primary risk factor, but whatever. Yeah,
it's like, and it's also, it's pronounced aspartame, okay? We all know that. That's how we have to be saying aspartame. Yeah. I think that also feels like the kind of thing that, like, the sugar lobby would come out with, too.
Because it's causing unlike sugar, which isn't associated bad, with any health problems.
What are we talking about fucking sugar?
Yeah, fucking just do whatever, guy. Like, listen, like statistically, like a third of the people listening to this are doing so while blanketed in wildfire smoke and like burning remnants of asbestos and insulation. Exactly. Like it's not going to be the aspartame that kills you guys.
Take your aspartame, like, eat your blue ice cream, do it for the sword, you know?
Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like you're fine. And by fine, I mean doomed, but everything is. So it's okay. Whatever. Anyway. You want to talk some more about Frank Lorenzo?
No, oh, fuck yeah, I do.
So today, you know, United Airlines is kind of the descendant of Continental, and United Airlines is like an airline, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's like, ah, United. I have so many great United experiences. It's also not like the worst of the airlines. They're just kind of like
right in the middle.
Yeah, right in the middle. You know, they're not as nice as like a smaller airline like Alaska, but I will take them over, I don't know, fucking American Airlines or whatever, certainly over like Spirit. But I'm never like psyched to get on a fucking United flight either. But people were psyched to fly Continental back in the day. Continental was like one of the airlines as shit, you know, the Reagan era is kicking off. You know, you've kind of got like it's like the end of the late Carter era, early Reagan era is when sort of Continental is kind of starting to look its age. You know, even after deregulation, they've kept their high fees and they've kept their passenger perks. So, like, passengers consistently rate it as, like, one of the best airlines in the world, but it's not making a lot of money, whereas TI, the airline Lorenzo runs, is basically the opposite. It's a shitty budget airline that cannot make, or that like, makes a profit, but does it because it's shitty enough for people to afford.
Right, exactly.
In 1979, Continental lost more than $13 million, and the bleeding accelerated in 1980. The company gets a new CEO at this time, a guy named Alvin Feldman, and Alvin is generally remembered, that should be a spoiler, as a nice guy and a diligent businessman of the old style, and he's like, he's trying to stop the bleeding, but he doesn't want it to, like, change its character. He tries to, like, he merges it with this other company. He's hoping that, like, he can keep it, you know, special and somehow make it profitable. But Continental, in addition to like dealing with changes in the market, is also feuding with their workers over new contracts. And because they're not as big as like American or TWA, you know, they've got a pretty small market cap, which means that you can actually purchase a controlling interest in their stock for surprisingly little money. And to Lorenzo, this is like a shark smelling blood in the water, right?
Yeah.
So its total market value is like $150 million. And because, the stock market's nonsense, the company is worth way more than $150 million. If you just like add up all of their planes, they're worth a lot more than that. But because the business isn't doing as well as it used to be, like their market cap is shit. And so Lorenzo's able to basically like buy up a bunch of big investors who have like interests in it, and like work out a buy. Like he just basically starts eating up more and more and more of like getting closer to a controlling interest in Continental, because if he's able to get it, he'll wind up with way more value in like assets he can strip than he's actually spending on this thing. So this process starts for him in February of 1981. And Feldman, when he realizes, oh my God, this guy who is like the corporate raider of the airline industry is buying up my beloved airline, he tries to go to war with him, right? But Lorenzo is a lot faster. He's a lot smarter.
Fights dirty, I bet.
Huh?
And fights dirtier, and I bet.
He fights dirty. Feldman's like a nice guy. Right. He's going to try the high-minded way of fighting back, and it's not going to work for him. But like, so he, as Continental, he goes to court to try to get the CAB to rule in favor of like, you know, basically saying that like, hey, for Lorenzo to buy up Continental because he already owns these other airlines is anti-competitive. But the CAB rules in Lorenzo's favor because it's the Reagan era. Texas Monthly writes, quote, while the 53-year-old Feldman remained at Continental's Los Angeles headquarters, Lorenzo was everywhere, flying around the country, lobbying legislatures, institutional investors, and even the media. Lorenzo made many promises. He wrote California officials that he had no plans to move Continental headquarters or any of its operations out of Los Angeles. He said he had no intention of firing employees. He said he wouldn't sell planes to raise money. Within 2 years, he had done them all. Yeah.
That's got to worry you. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to like sell the planes I see here for money. No, why would I do that? Yeah. Come on, guys. Come on.
as a rule, if you're like a regulator and like somebody starts making specific promises about what they won't do if you let them do something they want to do, those are the things they plan on doing, right?
Yeah. Like, they're telling themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So Continental's unions are kind of the most effective defense that Continental has against Lorenzo. And kind of working with Feldman, they come up with what seems like a pretty good idea on paper. It's what's called an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP. And basically, the idea that these unions work out with Feldman is that workers are going to buy control of the company. This could work out for them because federal law gave ESOPs really nice tax breaks, and they're able to kind of work with some banks to get, like, there's like $185 million they need to get in financing for this. So Feldman's on board. The union start like making a national campaign, basically telling people, hey, you know, you have all these nice fond memories of Continental, you know, we're this like prestigious airline, and, you know, we want to stop these ghoulish, soulless Reaganites from taking over our beautiful airline, and it'll be worker owned. And it's like, it shows you how different the world is, that like the Texas legislature passes a resolution like cheering on the effort, right? Actually really? Opposing a Texas-based company trying to take over the airline. Yeah. Well, because, like, if you think about it, like, I'm not going to say necessarily that there's less culture war brain poisoning, but it's different. And conservatives in this era, you know, they voted for Reagan, obviously, but there's still this attitude of, like, well, these are working, the idea of, like, working class people taking over their own airline is going to be more attractive to a lot of conservatives than, like, letting this ghoulish, bloodless Harvard grad take it, you know?
Right. Whereas now it's completely inverted, and it's like the thought of like any worker power is just like, no, like then firebomb them.
Yeah, Lorenzo would post a picture of himself in jeans and a shotgun, and people would be like assassinating pilots on the highway, you know? Right. So this is like a potentially, you know, cool idea, but there's a problem. The plan needs majority approval at a shareholders meeting for like the employees to be able to do this thing. And Lorenzo had 48.5% of the stock at this point, which is enough to block like anything from happening. Continental goes to the New York Stock Exchange and the California Corporation Commissioner's office to try and like force through the ESOP plan without a vote, but they get denied. And on August 7th, because it's not working out, the banks who'd offered to help finance it withdraw their financial commitments, and like, you know, it falls apart. So this doesn't work. Tragically, like the employees are not going to be able to buy their own airlines. And so 2 days after the banks pull their financing, while Lorenzo continues his full court press to take over Continental, the CEO Feldman issues a press release telling all of his workers that the ESOP plan is no longer possible. He tells them, sadly, he's like, and this is like a pretty emotional letter for him. He's like, you know, we can't get financing, you know, this has kind of sunk our chances. I'm so sorry that this failed. And then after sending this out, he leaves his office at LAX in the middle of the day, goes on a little shopping trip, and he returns soon after with a package. Frank works the rest of the day, winding down his control of Continental, preparing to hand it off to Lorenzo. And then at a little after 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, he calls the security desk and he asks them to turn off the lights in his office. Then he gets on the couch and he shoots himself through the head.
Oh my God. Yeah. No.
It's like, it's pretty bleak.
The fuck? It's like some Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Yeah,
shit.
It kind of is. Like, it's this really, like, intense story. There's a lot about kind of the changing of the guard just sort of within the capitalist system.
Totally.
From like, you know, Feldman, I'm not going to pretend Al Feldman, like, I'm sure he wasn't like a fucking flawless hero, but
no.
He comes from this era where like, yeah, like we're capitalists, but there's this understanding of like the prestige of the business. Some things are, it's not purely about maximizing profit, as
right.
opposed to Frank Lorenzo was like, no, nothing matters but short-term stockholder value.
Yeah, because it's like, yeah, Feldman is like from there of like, you provide people a service and they give you money and you want it to be fair and you give them some kind of value back. And this guy's like, yeah, fuck all
fuck
that.
Fuck all that shit.
I'll sell your fucking planes, dude. Get the fuck out of my face, loser.
Like, Feldman just can't exist in the era of Frank Lorenzo. So
no, very like No Country for Old Men.
It really is. Yeah. It's one of the more, like, yeah, Coen Brothers-y fucking stories in the history of, like, modern capitalism.
And that's, like, that's the day that the shit fell through, basically, that happened?
Yeah, yeah, kind of, well, like, a couple of days after.
Right, like, that was, like, but that was sort of, like, the last day of
yeah.
that that rule.
Woo. Yeah. And it's one of those things, it's interesting. I haven't seen a lot of, like, you know, we do get to bring up the Coen brothers. We've gotten a lot of, like, movies about, like, you know, the corporate ghoul or the capitalist ghouls of, like, the train industry, right? Like, stuff like
that. Right, right,
right. And a lot of more modern stuff. I've never actually seen this period depicted, but it's pretty, like, we're going to go over some of this, like, what's happening, this, like, battle between, like, the unions and the airlines and, like, this old attitude that's less competitive of, like, how airlines should be in the new one. Obviously, like, none of these people are, you know, when we talk about the old way of things, it is worth noting part of why it falls apart is that it can't make money, because it was never, right. That was never the primary purpose.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is complicated. It's certainly more complicated than a lot of the stuff we talk about. But, yeah. Frank Lorenzo is, like, reached out to by the New York Times, and he issues a statement being like, oh, you know, Mr. Feldman was a great guy, you know, I'm so sorry to his family. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. Like, you don't need to say anything, man. We know you don't care. Like, no, of course you do. Nobody expects that from you.
Yeah.
Your job is to not have a soul, Frank Lorenzo. It's fine.
He's so, like, yeah, but I got to say this stuff, you know, so I look human.
You got to say the thing. Yeah. Union resistance died with Feldman. Texas Air takes over Continental the next month, and in short order, the two airlines are combined, which means Frank Lorenzo now controls effectively the seventh largest airline in the company, or in the country. Now, there's a downside to acquiring a big bleeding giant like Continental. It is a money sink, right? There's a reason why it was on the table to buy. The airline industry is in a very new place, and it's kind of reeling from deregulation, from all these sudden changes at the end of the Carter era. And then at the start of the Reagan era, in August of 1981, you have the air traffic controllers strike, right? And this is basically air traffic controllers. It's like a hard gig. The hours are shit. They're not making enough money, so they decide to go on strike.
And if you fuck up, it's disaster.
If you fuck up, so many people die. Yeah. But when they decide, like, most people, again, like, if you've got, I don't know, like, people who work at Albertsons grocery stores go on strike. You know, that can matter. That matters in a community. It certainly matters to Albertsons. But, like, there's other grocery stores, you know, like, right. The overall impact to the country isn't massive. Whereas if all the air traffic controllers go on strike, like,
good
you
fucking
can
luck.
Shut, like, yeah. And you know. Obviously, that's not something a guy like Ronald Reagan is going to think should be acceptable. He is fundamentally against the idea that any union should have as much power as the air traffic controllers do. So he calls their strike a peril to national security, and he orders them back to work at the risk of losing their jobs. And there's still elements of this in, like, air unions. I think we all remember when, like, the stewardesses union put an end to that, like, the fucking budget. Like, the government shut down, basically, by being like, well, what if planes can't go in the air? How would you fuckers feel then? You know? Yeah.
Right, right, right.
And this is, yeah. So, there's a, yeah. Basically, Reagan's like, yeah, if you guys don't go to work, I'm going to fire everybody. And the union calls Reagan's bluff, and Reagan does, in fact, fire everyone. And he bans all of these air traffic controllers who had struck from federal service for life. This is very celebrated by conservatives, but it is a fucking disaster for a while because, like, suddenly all the guys who make air travel possible are gone.
Right.
So they have to fill vacancies. They bring in the military, you know, flight controllers and shit from the military. There's controllers who, like, for whatever reason, had worked outside the union and, like, different, like, weird little kind of niche parts of the industry. They bring in, like, like retirees and stuff. They bring in, like, people who had refused to go with the union on the strike. But it takes 10 years before FAA controller staffing returns to normal. The benefit of this for Republicans is that as much of a fuck up as it is for the industry and for flyers and for obviously these controllers, it's almost like a death blow to organized labor. In a lot of ways, you could argue that, like, you kind of have the labor movement, you know, starting up late 1800s, early 1900s, fighting for that 8-hour workday, all these other things that we get from organized labor. And labor has a significant degree of power kind of up until Reagan crushes this strike. And it's an epochal change in the way that we conceive of labor in this country.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the last time we were talking about this was just with the rail workers, like, at the end of the year, and I'm like, oh, what's the government gonna do? Because the last time it was the air traffic controllers, and look where that got us. But it is true. Like, there's so many huge fundamental shifts happening, whether it's just like the perspective of what even a business is and what it's meant to do, and like who it's supposed to provide value for, to who the fuck even deserves to, like, you know, demonstrate that they need better wages or working conditions.
Yeah.
In such a like cynical way.
Yeah. Now, you know, we can talk more. There's a lot more to say about, you know, Reagan and the breaking of that strike, but that is not the story of today. And while you might expect Frank Lorenzo obviously to be in favor of Reagan breaking the strike, and obviously he's like, he's a fuck the unions guy, this also has a negative impact on his business because it like, he is, when he buys Continental, his plan is to basically cut a bunch of like the routes that aren't efficient and launch a bunch of new routes and kind of like use his existing business to make it more effective. But like he can't actually expand or really wildly change the way his airline works and the way that he needs to if there's this like cap on how much air travel can exist because we're out of fucking controllers, right?
People
like this is a problem for him. And he's just burnt a shitload of capital to buy Continental. So he needs to be able to expand and show that, like, he can make a profit. In 1981, then Continental reports losses of, again, when he had bought Continental, they were losing like $13 million a year. In 81, they lose $100 million. So it's a little bit of like an Elon Musk type thing where it's like, I don't know, man, maybe this wasn't the best plan.
I think I can do something. Oh, fuck my life.
What yeah. Did I do? Oh, shit. You know, some of this is not directly his fault, but it's certainly the fault of like kind of the ideologies he's championed, this like war on, you know, the rights of labor.
And did he do like a boxing match against another airline executive?
Yeah, he does. He actually beats the shit out of Mark Zuckerberg. But at this point, Mark Zuckerberg is just like, you've seen some of those old Catholic propaganda cartoons with like the babies that are in heaven before they're born. Yeah,
exactly.
That's who he's fighting. Yeah. Yeah, like the Catholic anti-abortion propaganda angel Mark Zuckerberg.
It was a short fight.
Of Catholic propaganda, this podcast is sponsored by Catholicism. Catholicism! It's fine now.
Yeah.
What mood are you in today? It's very
I don't know. I don't know, Sophie. I don't know where I'm coming or going here. The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Constantly changing challenges like money sprees or treasure hunts that keep it fresh with new wild mini-games. Timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums, delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches, unique playing pieces, and so much more. The verdict is in with Monopoly Go. There's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now for free on the App Store and Google Play.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. Wow, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless, when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Wow, how have I been affording this? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/behind. That's mintmobile.com/behind. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/behind. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. We are back, and Miles, this is exciting. I just found out from you once I started talking about Catholicism that you are actually engaged in recruiting for a new crusade to retake the Holy Land.
Yeah.
But because we're 90s kids, the Holy Land is kind of the ephemeral concept of playing the N64 with your friends at a birthday party.
Exactly.
But there's still a high death toll expected. Is that correct?
Yeah. Because as much as we love GoldenEye, we are going to be using actual landmines and proximity mines.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, find Miles on a Give, Send, Go. And Patreon, he's taking donations on both of those to reclaim our 90s video game past.
And by that, I think you guys know what I really mean, but if we're going to get the money, it's about N64, okay?
Yeah. So 1981, Continental loses $100 million, and Texas Air is plummeting too, right? He saved this company, he made it profitable, what a genius. He loses $50 million in 1981. So this is a disaster. Behrens calls it a stockholder's nightmare, and what's actually happening here is that a lot of Frank's success, the perception that he was this like master of rescuing damaged airlines, was not real success, but the result of irrational exuberance. Investors liked how he talked about unions, and the market was good for the kind of airline he ran. But he was making a ton of bad calls, too. After the Continental acquisition, he launched a new major marketing rollout that had flopped disastrously, making Continental, in this period, the only airline that sees both revenue and passenger load drop for the quarter.
Wow.
So this is kind of revealed that he's not a great airline manager. He was just good at convincing stockholders that like things were on the up.
But that's
up.
How like all these private equity things end up is guys who only know how to make line go up end up taking over like healthcare companies. And they're like, I don't know. I just know how to make fucking numbers look different.
I can make the line go up. Now, I will say in a little bit of like defensive Lorenzo, this is like a real bad time to be running most airlines. If you're not one of the top like two or three big ones, you're having a lot of trouble. Braniff collapses at this time. So do a lot of the other old giants. And most of them are like getting bought up by kind of like the controllers at the very top. And Frank has like the seventh biggest airline, but there's a pretty big drop off between like the top three or four and number seven. And what we're seeing in this period is kind of the backswing of deregulation, right? Initially, there's this huge drop in ticket prices, way more people take to the sky. But the end of the CAB's anti-competitive regime also leads to an inevitable tightening of the industry. And kind of where that's ended up today, you know, we talked about it's not entirely negative. There's a lot of things that are positive about deregulation. But the other thing, the thing that it's like the way it all winds up is that today, four carriers control 80% of the domestic airline market. As former American Airlines chairman Robert Crandall told ABC, the consequences of deregulation have been very adverse. Our airlines, once world leaders, are now laggards in every category, including fleet age, service quality, and international reputation. Fewer and fewer flights are on time. Airport congestion has become a staple of late-night comedy shows. An even higher percentage of bags are lost or misplaced. Last-minute seats are harder and harder to find. Passenger complaints have skyrocketed. Airline service, by any standard, has become unacceptable. Now, Crandall is a business ghoul too, right? And he's like, he's kind of moaning the deregulation in part because like he's a guy who had succeeded in an earlier age of the airline.
Yeah, and had pride in it.
Exactly, yeah. But it's one of those things, so like, I don't know, there's a lot of downsides to deregulation. And at first, the it doesn't matter to Lorenzo. But like by the time kind of we're in the early 80s, the industry's starting to contract. And he's just kind of, it looks initially, he's not big enough to like make shit work. He's getting eaten alive by all sides. So the walls are kind of closing in on the guy at this point. And he defaults to what was basically his only real strategy: cutting perks for passengers and squeezing his employees as hard as possible. Frank didn't just see this as good business. There was a degree to which this is like a thing he enjoys. It's like a pleasure to him fucking with his workforce.
Right.
I found a book series called Flying the Line by George Hopkins. George is a former Navy pilot and an air travel industry historian. And he's got like this series of books called Flying the Line. And if you want a frustrating amount of detail about how air travel used to work, George is your boy, right? He will tell you way more than you ever wanted to know about how fucking airlines worked in the 70s and 80s. He portrays Lorenzo, and again, he's got an axe to grind against this guy. He portrays Lorenzo as almost ghoulishly excited to fuck over stewardesses in particular. Quote, Phil Nash, who went to work for Continental in 1966 after serving in the U.S. Air Force and later became ALPA EVP in 1980 to 1982, will never forget his first encounter with Frank Lorenzo. Above all others, Lorenzo typified this new managerial breed. At a special meeting in Denver, Nash asked Lorenzo, who was in the process of taking over Continental at the time, why he was so intent on reducing the pay of flight attendants. Didn't he know, Phil Nash asked, that many of them were single parents who couldn't afford to own homes at the pay rates he was proposing? Oh my Lorenzo God. Looked at Nash as if he were crazy. Quite frankly, I don't believe flight attendants ought to make enough money so they can own houses, Lorenzo told a flabbergasted Nash. Maybe they should find another job that pays better.
Oh, fuck. Wow, he's always wearing his, like, sociopath badge on his sleeve. Like, at every opportunity, he can't even... He's just like, yeah, they don't deserve air.
Yeah, I don't even think they're really homes. People. Yeah, fuck them. What if we just shoot them?
Like, yeah. We used to, if it's up to me, we'd throw them out the fucking plane before we land and get a new crop before the next flight takes off.
And like, yeah, it's wild because like Nash is a capitalist. Nash is a guy who believes in free enterprise, but also he comes from this old era where he's like, well, but they wouldn't be able to buy houses. And that's like the whole point, right?
Whole
like
thing.
Everyone's supposed to be able to buy a house.
That's why you toil. No, some people are fucking idiots who take these jobs and fuck them if they take them.
Yeah, like they work and then ideally they drop dead at age 49 when they stop being as profitable. So Frank's prime target next is going to be pilots. Now, for very obvious reasons, pilots tend to make pretty good money, right? And their costs are one of the more significant baked-in costs for airline management. And this is... Normally, when we talk about like the struggle of like unions against management, we're talking about like, yeah, you got like a bunch of coal miners, right? And maybe the industry changes around them or like the executives make a bad decision. But the coal miners are like doing their job. They're getting the coal out of the world and they're just getting like fucked over by the people who run the company. It's a bit different with pilots' unions because for one thing, up until recently, pilots had kind of run a lot of the airlines, right? So even if, you're just a flyer, you're not in management technically, the guy who runs your company is probably a pilot. And so are a lot of executives. And maybe you worked with some of these guys. So like when other airline unions get fucked over, the pilots are usually safe, because they're close with management, right?
Right.
And it's like, today we're dealing with this thing where like there's a shortage of pilots in part because there's this very unreasonably long period of time in the U.S. where you have to like be trained and have experience to be able to be a commercial pilot. That's like much longer than like what the requirements are in Europe. And it's a thing that like the pilots unions have fought for because they make more money that way. I'm not blaming everything on the pilots, but it's not exactly the same as like the stewardesses union, right?
Sure.
Because they are closer to running, closer to power, right? So pilots have more baked in benefits and they also like a lot of them are like friends with the guys who are running their company. So one consequence of this is that when management at other airlines had made cuts, the pilots had generally been spared. Dennis Higgins, who worked for Texas International, explained, quote, some people in senior management were extremely close to the pilots and smoothed that mess over. They spent time in pilots' homes, went to kids' graduations. It was very much a family atmosphere. So Lorenzo obviously does not care about the pilots. He wants to fuck them over, but he understands there's an opportunity here, right? Because the pilots' unions are already kind of acclimated to the idea that, like, well, maybe we can fuck over some of, like, our coworkers and other unions as and we'll still be okay. And Lorenzo, he's kind of like the British Empire, right? He's like, I feel like this is an opportunity I can play these unions off against each other in order to benefit myself. Hopkins writes, quote, Lorenzo, for all his faults, made no secret of his plans, but he deviously led various employee groups to believe that he was after concessions only from other unions. At the time of his takeover, Lorenzo hosted a cocktail reception for TXI's pilots at the Houston Intercontinental Hotel. Lorenzo flatly declared that except for pilots, he intended to take the airline back to the employment levels of 1967. There are profits to be made here, Dennis Higgins recalls Lorenzo saying. We are going to continue operating the same number of trips, but we are going to get rid of some ground for folks. So, because TXI's ground folks are unionized, this strategy means that the airline is going to, like, there's going to be some labor fighting over this, right? Mm-hmm. And Lorenzo is eager to fuck with the union. So his proposition is like, I'm going to turn all of our baggage handlers and ticket agents into temporary employees, right? I'm just going to replace the unionized guys with temps, which is like a standard tactic today and that's starting to be more common in this period of time.
Right.
He also argues that, like, well, we've got all these flights to cities that are like outlying, and so they've only got like one or two flights coming in a day there, so they don't need any full-time employees. So, like, for these smaller routes, we'll just hire like college students who need like shitty part-time gigs to be ground employees just when like the flight is departing and arriving. And it's one of those things, part of how he's able to get by with this initially is he tells the pilots union, hey guys, I want you to keep making money, but like, we can't keep paying you all this money if these worthless ground employees are siphoning all your money away.
So right? What do you say?
Yeah, so what do you say? Now, all of the pilots don't buy this. There are some pilots at this big Intercontinental Hotel meeting that are like, well, what if we try to offer better flights and like try to make more money that way? And Lorenzo, he has a violent reaction to this idea. Dennis Higgins recalls, quote, Lorenzo was openly against the better product concept. He said, the traveling public looks for the dollar sign. What they're interested in is a cheap seat. The ones who don't like our service can go pay higher prices on another carrier. He was very cynical about the public. And this is like, you can see, this is how all of air travel works now, right? Is like, fuck them. All they want is to see a cheap price. And you know what? We can make them pay more in the long run if we're Spirit Air. You know, we'll sneak in a couple of $100 charges that they're not seeing. Yeah. But all these idiots care about is that they see, you know, what looks like a good price initially. We can get them to do all sorts of dumb shit if we trick them. That's Lorenzo's attitude. He's kind of like one of the first guys in air travel who sees where things are going to go here. And he is right. Like, people mostly care about it being cheap. It turns out we're willing to suffer with a lot on planes as long as we don't have to pay too much.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, which, you know, whatever, that's life. So while he's doing all this, getting each union to agree to a few cuts under the promise that they'll be spared and someone else will get fired, he starts selling Continental aircraft as fast as he can. This puts like $21 million in the bank right away, and he gets another big like $30 million loan from Chase Manhattan. He does this public stock offering to raise more money. And over the course of 83, he builds up this big war chest, right? So suddenly Continental has like a weird amount of cash on hand, even though they lose like 80-something million dollars that year. And everyone assumes he's doing this, he's saving up money because he's going to buy another fucking airline, because that's what Frank always does.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually has a different, cunning, more fucked up plan. He's going to break the unions once and for all, and he's going to do it by declaring bankruptcy. Yeah, yeah.
I love that all of his goals are just in line with making things just as fucked up for other people as possible, just enriching himself.
Yeah, I mean, of course, like that's the way it all works. But he's doing it. This is one of the first times that he's really he's creating something. No one had ever done this before. So basically his plan is, hey, if you go into bankruptcy, I think you might be able to throw out all your union contracts. Right,
because and their pensions and shit.
Yeah, and no one knew if it would work this way. Right, like this had not been done before. But basically, his plan is like, I'll take this shit to the Supreme Court if I have to. I think eventually they'll rule with me because, you know, Reagan's in the fucking White House, right? I can see where the fucking winds are blowing.
Yeah.
It's
like the like Wright brothers of fucking the unions over. It's like, I don't know if you can. He's like, I don't give up. We're gonna try, man.
We're gonna figure it out. Yeah.
And if we do, and if it works, Welcome to a new age.
Yeah, that is exactly what he's saying. And so he would claim, like, he does his appearance at Harvard the next year, and he's like, well, you know, I really failed, and we had to do Chapter 11 because, like, I just couldn't make shit work. You know, this is on me. But we have, like, notes that he was sending around the company at the time where he's like, you know, this is what's going to work. Like, the creditors are ready for it. Like, we're going to fucking kill the unions with this shit. Like, that's the reason that we're doing this. And at the same time, he starts to execute this very slick media strategy where he's really playing up the company's financial problems, and he's blaming it all on workers' salaries, right? Like, I failed. What I failed in doing is I just couldn't get salaries low enough. You know, we're paying too much on workers, and that's why it's impossible to make a profit with this airline. Right. He claimed in a speech at Harvard, quote, what we tried to do was shift the story from it being a bankruptcy to a labor problem as fast as possible. And this works really well, right? So he's basically, as this is going on, as he's prepping to go into Chapter 11, he's renegotiating his contracts with these unions. And instead of working anything out with them, he just keeps at the last moment when they'll think they're about ready to sign a contract. He'd be like, nope, you know what? I can't do this or I can't do that. We have to go back to the drawing board. So the unions eventually decide to go on strike. And as soon as they go on strike, He furloughs all of the non-striking employees, the striking employees. He brings in scabs, and he declares Chapter 11, right? So he goes into bankruptcy, and he says, well, now that I'm doing bankruptcy, I want the government to let me revoke all of my union contracts. So yeah, that's the plot. That's what he's trying to do here. And this write-up from Texas Monthly describes what happens next. The airline immediately shut down operations and laid off all but 4,000 of its 12,000 employees. Continental executives said the line would resume flights 3 days later to selected cities at the low price of $49 one way. Returning workers would face pay cuts, increased productivity requirements, and the elimination of all pensions. The salary of flight attendants would drop from $29,000 to $15,000. Pilots making $89,000 would be paid $43,000, the same salary Lorenzo said he would take in place of his normal $257,000. At press conferences, he glossed over Continental's $50 million in cash reserves. The airline faced running out of money in a few days, he insisted. Meanwhile, union leaders and even some business executives denounced him. Wall Street analysts questioned the company's future, and competitors rejoiced. So Frank's plan here, there's like an element of desperation to this because no one's ever done this before. He's just pretty sure it's going to work. On September 27th, when like he reopens the airline and starts offering these cut rate flares, basically the whole Continental fleet remains on the ground. There were only a handful of flights he was able to actually pull out. But since the airline had technically resumed operations, he was able to ask the bankruptcy court to rescind the union contracts. Gradually, Continental starts opening up more and more flights, bringing in scabs to do all the work. But the real financial health of the company is unclear. He declares at a press conference that, like, we're doing great, the same day he asks the government to release $10 million in their funds to keep the airline from collapsing. The unions fight back. They go on strike. They refuse to go back to work for reduced pay. But they can't stop the scabs from flooding in. And Frank is able to bring in enough workers to keep this minimal schedule operational. Now, the union with the most clout and thus the most power are the pilots. And because pilots made bank, they had enough money that they were able to, like, draw funding from other pilots' unions to fund their part of the strike. So they start using some of this money to carry out a media campaign where they're basically trying to be like, all this non-union labor has made flying more dangerous. You might die in the air because of what Lorenzo's doing. Mm-hmm. This may have been true because Continental gets fined like $400,000 because the FAA sees that they're not like, they're breaking a bunch of rules, basically. But no planes crash from Continental in this period. So it's kind of hard to, like, you know.
Yeah, point the finger.
It would have helped him if some people had died, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's really interesting is, like, how ugly this strike gets. So on November 22nd, two Continental pilots get arrested trying to evade a police license checkpoint. Both of these guys are, I think this is like a DUI checkpoint, basically. But both of these pilots had been, they'd been driving to the homes of Continental pilots who were scabbing and throwing pipe bombs at their houses.
Oh, shit.
They get caught hucking pipe bombs at scabs.
Oh, no.
And it's like, there's this like little war that goes on, because the year after these guys get convicted, a Houston police attendant, lieutenant gets charged and convicted of selling confidential information about striking Continental employees to a private detective hired by the airline. So, the fucking nasty strike.
Yeah.
Soon after all this goes down, a court case is ignited by Frank's Chapter 11 move, and it gets a ruling from the Supreme Court. They declare that companies in Chapter 11 have the right to cancel burdensome union contracts. Now, Congress, seals this up. They pass legislation so that, CEOs can't do what Frank did. But He wins, right? He gets to actually, do this shit.
Oh, he got out. So he's is he the only one that got it over the line, basically?
That got it over the line in this way, right? There's still kind of more openings to do this, but Congress kind of makes it harder. But it works out for Frank. His company is still in pretty desperate financial straits, though. And because he's the guy who had, led it there, you might have expected him to have suffered financially. And he's, making a big claim, I've cut my salary. I'm making, way less money. You know, we're all hurting here. This is a lie. So basically, he's like, I'm going to drop my salary from $260,000 to $43,000. But he's that's not the whole story, because he's getting bonuses. Obviously, he's making hundreds of thousands of dollars in bonuses. But he's also set shit up so that there's this weird he's basically putting his money into this weird stock transaction that he's running through an automated subsidiary, which is doing he's basically doing an automated stock trick where he's buying shares and then reselling them once they get. Anyway, the way this all works out is that he's able to buy 200,000 shares of his company's stock at 50 cents a share for $100,000, but he only has to pay $5,000 because he has Texas Air loan him the rest of the money. And then he resells it 2 years later when it's worth more money and effectively makes an extra $1.5 million for paying $5,000, where he basically has the company subsidize his investment. So,
right.
Yeah. He's doing just fine, right?
Guess so, but I mean, he's only making $40,000 a year now, Robert.
Yeah, only making four. He's one of the first CEOs to be if I just tell people my salary's cut, these idiots don't understand all the ways we can fuck with stock prices.
They don't know that's a minuscule. I don't even need a salary. It's all the fucking bonuses and the stocks.
That's not where the money is. But you know where the money really is, Miles.
Tell me.
Podcast ads.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like these podcast ads. The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Constantly changing challenges like money sprees or treasure hunts that keep it fresh with new wild mini-games. Timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums, delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches, unique playing pieces, and so much more. The verdict is in with Monopoly Go. There's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now for free on the App Store and Google Play.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We're back. So, yeah, it's really interesting. There's during this kind of period of time, Frank is also really willing to fuck over his other, like, the corporate ghouls who, like, make these moves possible. One of the guys who basically funds his Chapter 11 scheme is the chairman of a company called American General, Harold Hook, and he floats Frank the money to keep Continental going while he's, like, fighting with the unions. And the understanding is that, like, they will be partners in the airline business once it gets back in the black. But Lorenzo doesn't sign anything with Hook. Like, it's a handshake deal. And so as soon as the airline's making money again, Hook is like, well, yeah, now we're running this together. And Lorenzo's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? You thought a handshake deal meant anything? Nah, bro.
No, that wasn't even to, like, seal the deal. I was like, all right, yeah. See you later. Put her there. And then you left. You had nothing to do. What? No, dude, that's not even legal.
And it's because Hook has a lot of money. They go to court over this, and, like, a lot of the case winds up being around how he had used the word partner in these conversations. And his argument is like,
cowboy
style. No, when I said partner, that was like a colloquial term. It's like, buddy, cowboy style. You know, that's all I meant.
Partner.
Yeah, exactly. Howdy, partner. We're a Texas airline. Howdy,
partner. You know, I feel like this. Yeah. We can go into business, partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what he does.
You could be my business partner. Wait, so I could be your business or your business partner? Okay.
So after he breaks the pilots union and he wins this fight, scandals start to erupt that makes it clear how he had, like, done a lot of the business. So one of the things that he does in order to get investments is he, like, makes these deals overseas while the problems are happening with, like, in, like, Australia to, like, run a bunch of, you know, get a bunch of routes for Continental. Mm-hmm. And it comes out after the fact that, like, he had basically bribed the governor, the ceremonial governor of Victoria, which is a thing that exists, with free flights in order to help him negotiate to get these routes. And then it came out that the federal judge who'd ruled on their Chapter 11 case before it hit the Supreme Court, right after, like, the case goes Lorenzo's way, he quits being a judge and gets a job at the law firm that represented Lorenzo's companies. Holy so, like, shit. Yeah, this is all fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, he's got all the right moves.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going well for a while, but more acquisitions followed. Like, Frank kind of goes a little nuts after he wins this Continental case. And, like, as profits start to return, he starts getting more investments. There's a lot of, you know, people have a lot of confidence in him because he's this, like, union buster. So he's able to, like, basically work his way into taking over Eastern Airlines next, which is the number three airline in the country. So he is, like, I think I'm like 20% or whatever, like one fifth of all air traffic in the United States is under Frank's personal control at this point. But also, Eastern is, like, bleeding money, and all of his companies kind of are, because after he's able to get these kind of, like, short-term investments and shit, it becomes clear that, like, well, he's just made his airlines a lot shittier, like, and nobody actually likes flying on them. So this, again, it's the same thing that had happened, like, a couple of years earlier. Like, he starts hemorrhaging money. And I'm going to quote from a write-up on avgeekery.com. Lorenzo was so heavy-handed with subordinates at Eastern that, in the end, the airline's employees basically put their own jobs on the line to get rid of him. When he first arrived, he tried to turn the company around by incessantly hammering the unions to make concessions. He enlisted the help of Eastern Airlines' managers, who were company men and enforced what some called abusive policies against employees. Workers were required to adhere to very strict rules and were written up for lying about non-existent medical conditions if they called in sick to work. So many machinists were accused of theft and/or drug use that in one year alone, 262 unionized machinists lost their jobs. Psychological warfare was even waged on flight attendants, who were forced to collect garbage on flights, a violation of their contract. What if a flight attendant refused to act as a garbage collector? They were fired on the spot for insubordination. So Eastern gets combined with Continental, Frontier, and People Express, and, you know, it's one of those things where, like, his constant cost cutting, like, he's looking great on paper for a while,
right?
But everything starts to fall apart after this. And Frank, you know, is squeezing these people so much that, like, eventually the Eastern Airlines Machinist Union goes on strike. And up to this point, like, 1989, every time the union employees had gone on strike against him, Frank had wound up just, like, beating the piss out of them. So he's pretty confident. George H.W. Bush is in the White House now. He's like, I got this stuff.
Yeah. Hold my beer.
Yeah, hold my beer. But Bush doesn't hold his beer. He refuses to create a mediation board. He basically says, no, the federal government's not getting in on this. Like, you're going to handle this alone. And this is when Frank thinks back to Andrew Carnegie. So he hires mercenaries in order to, like, escort his employees off the airfields when they try to lock down the airfields at gunpoint. He kind of goes, like, hard on this shit. But again, without the government backing him, his heavy-handed tactics fail. The pilots and the flight attendants unions are so, like, horrified by what he's doing that they go on a sympathy strike. He hadn't thought this was possible. He thought he'd broken them enough that this wouldn't happen. But they ground his entire, like, Eastern Airlines, the third largest airline in the U.S., is grounded right after he buys it. And this just causes a cascading, like, series of losses that sends him, like, bankrupts his companies, right?
Right.
Obviously, Lorenzo gets away rich, but his empire gets broken up and sold off, and, like, he gets forced out of aviation forever. Part of why is that, like, the Scandinavians buy Continental Airlines, but they only do so, like, if the U.S. government will agree to ban Frank from working in the airline industry for a decade. They're like, we'll pull your fat out of the fire, but you can't let this guy near an airline again.
Holy shit.
He tries 2 years later to create an airline called Friendship Airlines, but the Department of Transportation is like, absolutely not. Like, you nearly collapsed the entire industry. We are never letting you anywhere near a fucking plane again. And so he just spends the rest of his life as a rich guy. He's got, like, a capital VC firm. He's still alive. He still makes a lot of money, but he's not allowed near planes anymore. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Now he's doing, he's doing venture capital.
Yeah, and he gets into VC shit.
And private equity, as it always is.
Same.
The thing I learned was always, like, whenever you think a business is, like, shitty, but this business was, like, so big, what happened? It's usually because private equity just bought it.
Yeah.
And it's, like, slowly being, all the good shit is being pulled out. There's no people working. So if you, like, when you go into, like, Toys R Us and it looks like a fucking spooky ghost town, it wasn't because, like, they were fucking up. I mean, because they were profitable up until private equity bought them.
Yeah.
Because private equity starts hollowing it out.
Yeah. So it's good.
Yeah. It is good. I wonder, now I just want to know what fucking Frank Lorenzo was up to with Savoy Capital or whatever his fucking private equity firm's up to.
Yeah. Maybe that will be a story for another day. But today was the tale of why airlines be that way.
Yeah. Why do they?
Yeah. Anyway, you got anything to plug, Miles?
Just go at Miles of Gray, wherever you see at based symbols.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to at Miles of Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was going to make a joke about the pilots and the pipe bombs, but that's probably going to get us in trouble.
I would.
You still want to fly?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Ad free, Cooler Zone Media. Whatever. We're done.
Later.
Behind the Bastards is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.